These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
I don't know how many weeks it's been since he played and he comes out banging. You know, he goes on his rehab assignment and he's hitting the ball all over the park, you know, in AAA, and then he shows up here and he just, these are the kinds of things that he does, and he's just a fantastic player. And, you know, it's not just the big swings and everything. He gets our dugout going. He gets our clubhouse going and together. You know, we can do a lot of good things when he's out there. It was a nice day for him on Father's Day.
Rocco Baldelli there talking about Byron Buxton, of course, returning to the Twins lineup. And welcome in to Talking Twins, a Mackie and Judd production. Zolgad, Jake DePue, as always, Declan Goff, executive producing, as always. And Jake, I want to start with Byron Buxton, who came back and was great. He has had an all-star year. He's going to be, whether he's voted in or picked, he's going to be the Twins representative at the all-star game in Colorado, and he deserves to be. But I've given this a lot of thought, and like, we can go through the weird permeations of why he didn't play in Seattle. Did they sit him too long? Like, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff we don't know that we could certainly get into. But I want to start with this as a new way to frame this entire conversation up. Byron Buxton, if he feels he can play in a baseball game, unless he has a concussion. So I'm not talking about taking chances with the brain, but body wise. If he has a sore hip, clearly his hip still hurts. I think if you're the Twins, you now have to come to the conclusion that if he is 65% or more in your mind healthy, he needs to play, and here's why. He's not young, so like, you're not protecting the, oh my God, this kid's 22. Are you going to play him and take that chance? He's a veteran player. He also is a guy now who has a skill set that, even if part of the skill set is missing, is better than the majority of your players, because he can come in, for instance, hit home runs. So like, this whole notion of 100%, it's not only ridiculous, it's unnecessary. Like, what's the downside? And if he gets hurt again, he's hurt all the time. So explain to me, after what we saw in Texas over the weekend, what is the upside to trying to get him to 100% when he's better than the majority, if not all of your players, at, let's say, 70%?
Yeah, so first of all, let me just start off. I'm losing my voice a little bit. I had quite a weekend. I got after it a little bit too hard. So
Proud of you.
So if you wanted to hear less of my voice on this podcast, today's your lucky day. But yeah, so as far as Buxton, I would agree with you. I think as long as, like you said, it's not a head issue, if he feels like he can play and there isn't some glaring injury where they just say, you know, you're going to shatter a bone, or, you know, your hip is going to get displaced or whatever by playing, he should be out there, because like you said, it's not just about his speed anymore. You know, I mean, he is hitting for power. He's hitting for average. Like, defensively, even if he's only 70% or 75%, he is a huge upgrade over anybody else that you can put out there right now. So I know there was a lot made of that clip of him running down the first baseline really slowly in that rehab game. It certainly didn't look good, obviously. I would also say the fact that the first baseman juggled that made it look a lot worse than it was. And I think if you took some other clips from that game, it would show him running a lot better than how he was running down the first baseline. So we need to view that with a little bit of context. But yeah, I mean, this obsession with wanting to get players to 100%, I think has just gone too far with the Twins. I really do. Like, I agree with what Royce said. Like, for a veteran ball player, there is no such thing as 100% when you're in the middle of the season. You know, like, these guys fight through stuff all the time. And I get the rationale of wanting to make sure guys are healthy. And that does make some sense. But I think the Twins have gone too far in that direction. Yep. I really do. And I think the whole thing with Buxton flying him out to Seattle, and he seemed like, you know, he wanted to play. He obviously wanted to play, and the Twins weren't letting him. And then they finally let him, and he has an amazing series in Texas. Like, it's a perfect example of this. Like, let the guy play. He's not going to be 100%. As soon as opening day hits, you know, he's not going to be 100%. Most position players aren't going to be 100%. If they say they can play, they should be out there playing. Again, unless it's a head issue.
Sure, sure. But the thing I don't like, too, is this. I think the Twins actually cause more problems with a guy like Buxton by saying, well, if you can't go full tilt, we're not going to play you, which with his competitive nature causes him to go full tilt sometimes when he shouldn't. Like if he flat out would told you, hey, Jake, I'm at a point now where I can play, but my hip hurts a little bit. So if I hit a ground ball to first base, I'm going to start a jog. I'd be like, okay, cool. That's fine. Yep. Like that's, but it feels like the Twins challenge a guy like that to be like, if you can't fly down the line, and I get it, him flying down the line is a difference making play. So I'm not saying that you don't want that. You do want that. But the skill set is so damn high that if he tells you, you know what, today I can play, but I don't feel the greatest in the world. And you know what, if I bounce the ball to second base, I'll run, but I'm not going to run like I ordinarily run. I feel like that causes the Twins to be like, oh my God, then you just can't play, where they should be like, oh, okay. The ground ball that was a bang bang play early in the game on Sunday to me was the perfect example, because Buxton, to his credit, flew down the line. And as he got to first base, he did a crow hop. And it was pretty clear that something bugged him. Like, he just tweaked it. And you know what? That's going to happen. But he bolted away from first base coach Tommy Watkins so quick and ran out to his position because he didn't want to deal with Rocco and Watkins being like, are you okay, man? Are you all right? I just feel that the Twins are actually making things worse through this. If you're not completely healthy, you can't play. That's in sports. That's what we like to call nonsense.
Yeah, it does. I agree. It's gone way too far. And you saw it with Kenta Maeda when he fielded that comebacker in that game. It's not like he was like grimacing. It's not like he wasn't grimacing. Maybe he stretched out like slightly, but you know, Rock, when the trainer came racing out and Maeda had a smile on his face, like, no, I'm fine. We saw that with Berríos earlier in the series too, where he took a comebacker, I think off the foot, and like immediately pointed to the dugout and put his hands up like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I think we saw that with Tyler Duffy a couple of weeks ago.
Like, he started laughing too, just like Maeda did.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like it's become almost a joke in that clubhouse. Look, I get wanting to protect players. I really do. I'm on the side of protecting players to a certain extent, but this is professional sports. It's baseball. These guys play through stuff. If they tell you they're okay, you got to let them play, fight through stuff. Like, that's just the way it works. And so with Buxton, you know, I think they're pissing him off. You know, I really do. I think between 2018, when they manipulated his service time, and you know, by not calling him up in September, he was very pissed about that. Between that and now, you know, not playing him when he wants to play. I think if they want to sign him to a long-term deal, you know, ultimately money talks, and if they give him what he wants, I'm sure he'd sign. But I don't think, and this is just my opinion, I'm not reporting anything, but I don't think they're probably on great terms right now, the front office and Buxton. It seems like they keep annoying him. And certainly with the 2018 thing, I don't blame him. And the fact that he looked so good in this series over the weekend, I mean, he was flying down the line.
Yeah.
Like, that tells me that he was probably ready to go, you know, a few days before they finally activated him. I mean, he looked great in his rehab. He hit, what, 2 home runs, a double in his rehab, or I think a triple as well. Like, this is, I think they're going too far. I really do. I'm with Royce. Like, there is no such thing as 100% when you're in the middle of the grind. This guy wants to play. He's your best player. Mm-hmm. Put him out there and let him fight through some things. And that's the deal with Maeda. It's the deal with Berríos. Like, all these guys, it seems like the kid gloves are on, not just for Buxton, but for everybody on the roster almost. And I don't understand. And I don't think it's working.
In Buxton's case, I think that you're right with that assessment, because they are now actively potentially costing him money.
Right.
Because he's now, I'm sure there's been conversations in the Buxton camp that we should break the bank here. And the more that the Twins are like, yeah, but you can't play right now. And they're like, no, we can play. But they're like, but you're not completely healthy. And they're saying, okay, if he's not completely healthy, he's still a really good ball player. He's a great player. And the perception that is going to be out there if and when he hits the market, and I understand, I do think he'll get paid by somebody, but there's going to be more and more teams who are like, but dude, you didn't play, you know, games played, look at the games played. And he's going to say, but I could have played an X amount. I might not have been completely healthy, but I could have played. So I think you're on to something with the fact that the entire Buxton camp would be annoyed. And I would like to know what happened behind the scenes this time as far as what got him back on Friday? Because Rocco was a long way, like he pivoted from still really can't run to, okay, now we saw today he's great, which I don't buy. But I'd like to know who's making the decisions here, and I'd like to know what the process is, because it all comes back to Rocco, which might be fair, but it might not be fair. I'd love to know how this is playing out, but I definitely think they're being so cautious with a guy who I think is just downright embarrassed as well, that he doesn't play a lot, becomes a big factor here. And we have turned a corner where contractually this is going to hurt him, because there's definitely some potential suitors that are going to use this against him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm sure that's motivating his, you know, displeasure with the Twins, that he's going to hit free agency soon. And he has another year of arbitration, and you get judged in arbitration based on, you know, how many home runs you hit and how many games you play. Like, this stuff matters. And I do wonder if maybe they're protecting him because they want to trade him.
I thought of that. Know, yeah.
I think it's at least a possibility that, you know, they want him healthy for a possible trade. I would personally would not trade Buxton, but I mean, unless the return was just absolutely overwhelming. But that's a possibility. But this has been a theme. You know, it's been a theme over the last couple of years. And I think Rocco plays a role in it, but he's not a doctor. He's not making medical decisions, right? Like, this has to be beyond just Rocco. It's got to be the training staff and the front, they always use the word collaborative, right? This has to be a collaborative decision. But yeah, I just think, as I said, I think the kid gloves, it's gone too far. And the fact that, again, it was like 31.2 feet a second per second or whatever. Like, he was absolutely flying. If this is him at 90% or whatever, like, that's more than good enough, you know? So I'm of the opinion that if he says he can play, and there's no obvious significant medical issue,
right,
then you got to put him out there. You got to put him out.
I agree. I agree completely. All right. 4-game win streak now. I've started to see it on Twitter. Some fans are like, well, wow, this could be. And Rocco's out there saying, we got all our guys back now, or we got a bunch of our guys back now. Josh is hurt again with a calf, so he's not back. He's out, in fact. But anyway, Texas stinks. I hate to be a downer here, but the Rangers stink. You swept them. Good for you. That's awesome. But I, the downside to this is I hope this does not discourage the team from doing what they absolutely have to do, which is dumping off parts. In some cases, I still contend as soon as possible. Andrelton Simmons is fun to watch at short a lot. I get all of that, folks. But I want Polanco back at short, and I want your guy, Nick Gordon, playing a lot more right now. I hope this doesn't dissuade them, if they go on a little run here, from making the moves they need to make to be a better ball club in 2022 or 2023, if we don't play baseball in 22. This stuff starts to make me nervous, because I don't know how front offices and teams are going to interpret this. I interpret this as almost nothing other than certain guys, Robles, for instance, potentially driving up their value by looking better than they maybe did previously. Is that fair?
Well, so what I would say is I don't think it will. I think they're going to sell them. I mean, barring some 15-game winning streak or something like that, if they go on a little mini run here where they win 10 of 12 or 15 of 19, that's not going to be enough. Because if you look at the track record of this front office, they've been very hesitant to buy and really go all in. But what they're not at all hesitant to do is sell. In 2017, they sold and made the playoffs. In 2018, they were making a little run. They were like 7 games back of first in late July, and they sold, you know, they traded Dozier and Fernando Rodney and Escobar. So they've shown a willingness to sell, for sure. They just haven't shown a willingness to buy. So I would, again, barring some huge, you know, money ball, like, you know, Oakland A's money ball, 2002, 20 game winning streak, that type of run, I don't think there's any question they're selling. And I think the comments that have come out from Valvey and Levine, they don't explicitly say it, but it's made pretty clear. They've made pretty clear that they're going to sell. So I wouldn't be worried about that. I really wouldn't. What I would be worried about is giving playing time to guys like Andrelton Simmons, who should be a bench guy right now. There's no reason Andrelton Simmons should be playing every day, because if you want to move him, the only thing that can happen is he gets hurt.
Yep.
You know, he's not going to, like, we know what the bat is and we know what the glove is. Like, there's no surprises with Andrelton Simmons. So why not play Nick Gordon, whether it's at second base and moving Polanco to short, or play a right, you know, there's all sorts of mixing and matching you can do, but you should be playing your young guys. Andrelton Simmons should not be playing every day anymore. I really don't understand why he is, because they're going to move him and you don't want him getting hurt. He has ankle issues. So he should be playing two or three times a week.
Yes, and move him as soon as possible. You don't need you don't need to take him up to July 30th. Move him. I mean, you're going to get what you're going to get for him. There's not going to be this big, huge market, unless I'm totally wrong. He has value. He's going to potentially help a playoff contender, but get him to that team as soon as possible. And the one thing about the Texas series, I think, that frustrated me a bit was Nick Gordon, who stuck, and that's good. Astudillo should have gone down. He did. Nick Gordon didn't. But, you know, Nick Gordon, he has to play. There's no reason not to find a place. You can find out right now what you have, and you're not going to do it by acting like your club is good. Nick Gordon, you know, he's just a backup one. No, get him out there. Get him out there three times per week. Give him at-bats. Yeah, three or four times. But the point being is, you know, put him at second. That's fine. A little bit of short. I don't care where you, I really don't care where he plays. But he's the type of guy who needs to play, and to trot out continually these lineups that indicate everything's normal. We're going to put our A team out there, right? Which is Simmons at short, Nelson Cruz DH. That's not productive now. Like, that's no longer productive. What's productive is to find out what you have. Now, the one thing that I will applaud is Astudillo being sent down, because I was beginning to think they weren't going to do that. And there is, I mean, God bless him. I'm sure he's a great guy. He seems like the guys love him. And I do think he is a nice player on a good team, because, you know, he provides clubhouse humor. But all of that being said, the 2021 Twins don't need a guy like that. They need guys that they can find out about as soon as possible. So that's my rant, is I don't want this winning streak or pop of success, especially when it comes against another crappy team, to alter the philosophy of anybody whose decision matters. Rocco, Falvey, Levine.
Yeah, and I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens with Max Kepler. Obviously, Kepler needs to play, because I think they might be showcasing him for a trade. Because you have Larnach and Kirilloff now, who are basically the same player as Kepler, more or less, left-handed bats, you know, corner outfield bats.
Yep.
They're being paid a fraction of what Kepler's paid, and they have, you know, 6 years or whatever of team control. So I would not be surprised at all if the Twins look to move Max Kepler, because they have built-in replacements now, Larnach and Kirilloff, and those guys should be playing every day. But so, you know, you can put Kirilloff at first, and Sano won't get as many at-bats, which is kind of what they've been doing since Kepler came back. But if Kepler puts together a good month here or so,
yep,
I would not be at all surprised if they move him to a team like the Rays.
Enjoy a weed-free summer at the lake, courtesy of Aquaside. One easy application of Aquaside pellets can eliminate weeds and lake muck. Aquaside has been trusted by hundreds of thousands of lake homeowners since 1960. Neglecting aquatic weeds can hamper recreational activities like swimming and boating. Lake weeds can also provide breeding habitats for insects. Make your lake shore beautiful this summer with Aquaside. Call 1-800-328-9350 or go to aquaside.com.
And as far as first base goes, I would also move Cruz as soon as I possibly could. Again, you have he's a really nice player when he's going well, but I believe on July 1st is going to turn 41. And because he can be traded he can be traded only within the American League, because our guy Manfred didn't adopt the DH for the National League. I want to move Cruz as soon as possible, because what you could do then is move Kirilloff to first base full time. And if you DH Sano, I don't care now. I mean, that's fine. I don't give a damn. So that's another move that can be made pretty easily, because your opening day first baseman is Kirilloff. Right? Like, he needs to be that guy. I don't think he's good enough in a corner outfield spot to justify regular time out there, and I think he'll be a more than adequate first baseman. He can make some plays in the outfield, but he's not great.
Yeah, I mean, I think in 2022, Miguel Sano is probably your DH. Although, I mean, based on the numbers,
gone for all
he has like a 670 OPS. So, but, you know, I think you're right. I think Kirilloff will be probably the opening day first baseman in 2022. It depends what they do with Kepler. That'll matter. But I agree. He's not great in the field. Larnach is definitely, I think, superior in the field. So I would put him out there over Kirilloff. Mm-hmm. But Kirilloff is fine at first base. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he can play there. Absolutely.
All right. You put together what I think it's going to be a very depressing but yet intriguing, yeah. So stay tuned. You put together a list of the Falvey Levine off-season moves. Now, we've talked about these separately quite a bit, and it's pretty much been a disaster. But put together the whole puzzle, because it involves more names and players than we talk about on a regular basis, including Lamont Wade, who, by the way, props to you. You were high on last year or last couple of years. Whenever I've talked to you,
Judd, I was high. It's 2017. Okay. This goes back to 2017. Okay. And my old Mining the Miners column on 1500 ESPN.
But I mean, to your credit, you were, and they gave him away and now they got nothing for him. So give me the list that you put together of the moves that have, for the most part, all backfired.
Yeah, so we've, like you said, we've been talking about all of these kind of in isolation. And so I wanted to really look at the whole picture to see, has this offseason been, or was this offseason as bad as we've made it out to be? And when you look at it all, it paints a pretty damning picture for this front office and what they did in the offseason. All right, so we'll start with position players. Who did they bring in? They brought in Cruz. That was a good signing, right? No objection there. Cruz was good. Then they brought in Andrelton Simmons. Simmons, I think, has been a disappointment. His bat has been about what it is. It's been a little bit worse than what it's been over his career. I think the glove has still been good. Certainly the metrics will tell you the glove has been good. He's booted balls. He's made a lot of throwing errors. He made a really big error on opening day. I think the glove, I'm still impressed with him defensively, but I think it's been a little bit of a disappointment based on the expectations that I had. So when you combine that with all the COVID stuff, right? So I don't like to speculate on COVID, so let's just deal in facts. He stated on Twitter he's not getting the vaccine.
Yep.
After the Twins, most of the players got vaccinated. A few days later, he tested positive. A few days after that, they had an outbreak and had to cancel games on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying Simmons for sure was the cause of that outbreak, but certainly that's, you know, his testing positive has been detrimental to that team. And that outbreak was a huge factor. So I think when you combine the bat being bad, the defense being maybe not quite as good, and the COVID stuff, I don't think he's been anywhere close to the $10.5 million that they signed him for.
I think. Go ahead. Just quickly, I think he gets to a ton of balls that most guys don't. Like, yes. His range is spectacular. The glove is good. It's not as good as I thought, but the arm is phenomenal. And on a good team, he would fit perfectly. But you bring up the intangible thing, which I think can't be dismissed. And I do think that there's an untold story here that the Twins and teams across sports are not going to want out, which is vaccinated guys versus non-vaxxed guys. And that goes beyond Simmons. That goes to locker rooms and chemistry and political beliefs, religious beliefs, right? So I do think that there are some teams that probably has played a big role for. But have the Twins achieved what they thought they would when they signed him? No, absolutely not. Not even close.
Yep. So I would say that was probably not a good signing, although I agreed with it at the time. All right. So they brought those guys in. You could look at fringe guys like Ref Snyder and Kyle Garlick, I guess, have contributed in spurts. But those were their two big position players they brought in. Right. Who did they get rid of? Right. So one of the big themes of this season has been how many different guys have played center field with Buxton out. Right. And we hear that all the time. This is our seventh guy. They're eight, you know, whatever, playing center field. Well, they got rid of two really good players who could play center field. Akil Baddoo was a legit prospect all through the minor leagues. They didn't protect. All they had to do was give him a 40-man spot. They didn't do that. Detroit drafted him in the Rule 5. Akil Baddoo leads Detroit in OPS. He's their best hitter. He's starting in center field for them. Judd, you can make a legitimate case. He will be the Tigers' all-star representative. That's how good he's been.
I hope he is. Good for him.
They got rid of him. They just let him go. They traded Lamont Wade Jr., who has an 814 OPS. He's hitting leadoff in a lot of games for San Francisco, who has the best record in the National League.
Yes.
They traded him for Sean Anderson, who they've since DFA'd. Okay. to put that in context, those two guys, 853 OPS for Bedu, 814 for Wade, there are only three players on the Twins, Cruz, Trevor Larnach, and Buxton, who have a higher OPS than those two guys, right? They got rid of those guys for nothing. So when we talk about all the guys they've had to put in center field that shouldn't be there, and that's the reason for, you know, the season's gone so badly, well, yeah, that's partly true, but it's also true that they just let go of two really solid players for nothing.
Yeah.
So that's bad. All right.
That's real bad.
It is. It's real bad. So then that's the position player side. Now you get to the pitching, which is even worse. They committed $10 million to Jay Happ and Matt Shoemaker, who have ERAs respectively of 6.12 for Happ and 7.57 for Shoemaker. That's been a disaster. They signed Randy Dobnik to a $9.25 million contract. Yes. He has a 7.83 ERA.
Yes.
I'm still a little higher on Dobnik than you are, Judd. I think he can be a serviceable fifth starter, but clearly he's been bad this year, and that contract extension right now does not look good. So they committed a lot of money to three guys who have ERAs over six. That's really bad. They brought in Colomé. We don't even need to talk about Colomé. Everybody knows the story there.
Shouldn't be on the team anymore. That's the story.
Right. They traded for Sean Anderson, who was DFA'd. They signed Hansel Robles. Robles, for $2 million, he's lived up to that contract for sure. He's been pretty good. He's a high wire act. He walks a ton of guys, but his ERA is under three. That was a fine signing.
Agree.
And then they brought in all of these guys, and where they touted their depth, right? We have so much depth. We have unbelievable depth. All right. Derek Law, 8.53 ERA, DFA'd. Brandon Waddell, 11.25 ERA, DFA'd after he pitched the 10th inning and gave up a bunch of runs earlier this year.
Yeah, I was at that game.
Sean Anderson, DFA'd. Juan Manaya, DFA'd. The only guy that they brought in that's done well is Luke Farrell, right? So the bullpen has been a disaster in terms of the guys they brought in. Who did they let go? Zach Littell. They DFA'd Zach Littell for really no reason at the end of last year. He cleared waivers. They could have still kept him. They could have re-signed him. The Giants signed him to a minor league deal. He's been really good with the Giants. He's opened a bunch of games for them, and he's their like seventh and eighth inning guy on a great team, right? He has a 3.43 ERA, but that's basically all due to one disastrous outing, other than one outing where he gave up four runs and I think didn't record an out. Other than that, he's been spectacular, and they're using him late in games or as an opener. They got rid of him for nothing. They also let, if you really want to get nitpicky, Tyler Wells was a guy they didn't protect. They could have given him a 40-man spot. The Orioles drafted him in the Rule 5. He has an 11. He strikes out 11 guys for nine innings. He has a whip of around one. He's not walking anybody. His ERA isn't that great, 4.13, but clearly a guy who they wish they still had in their system. So when you add all of this up, I mean, they whiffed on almost everyone, with the exception of Robles and Cruz. Like, they whiffed on everyone that they gave big money to, and they let a bunch of guys go for nothing who are having good years and could have really helped them.
Yep.
It's been a disaster. Like, this is just I don't know how you can really argue against this. I don't feel like I'm spinning this that much. Like, these are just guys they let go who are having great years and guys they brought in who are having terrible years. It's been a disaster of an offseason, and it's played a big role in why the Twins are where they are.
Which causes real concerns, and this actually goes back a few years, to ability to evaluate talent, especially plug-in guys, so not stars, but, you know, bullpen guys that can help you versus guys that are going to come in and blow up. And to your point, Jake, you're going to DFA them almost immediately. Like, if you look at how many Akil Badus have the Twins brought in themselves, right?
Right.
With this group. And, you know, the fascination, for instance, with Astudillo or with Jake Cave, I just don't understand it. Like, there's this, we can't lose Jake Cave. Really? Like, I'd rather take a chance on a player like Badu than keep Jake Cave. The thing that I will say in watching Lamont Wade Jr. last year a bunch when he was here, and the thing that I liked about him, and this goes beyond his on-the-field performance, but in the locker room and talking to him and watching him play, you could tell he was super smart. Like, he was a headsy baseball player. Like, the exact type of guy who you want on your bench, because he's going to follow along very closely, be situationally aware. He can play first and the outfield. Like, he brings a lot of tools that are ideal for a guy playing his role. And he probably can help teammates too. Like just things like that. He's not comic relief. He's actually a real baseball player who approaches it. He probably has the brain of a regular, and he might have the abilities of a guy who can play on a semi-regular basis. And you would think a guy like Rocco or Falvey would see that and be like, okay, there's more here than we've gotten so far.
Exactly.
But this is what I don't understand. So we're not talking about just pure talent here because you know, the Buxtons are few and far between, and God bless them. They're fun to watch. Don't get me wrong. But nothing personal against Jake Cave, okay? But, like, if I grade Jake Cave and what he brings from just my observations and Lamont Wade, I'm keeping Lamont Wade. And this is not personal. These are the type of decisions that play a rather large role over the course of a full season.
So we talked about this last week. Intelligence matters in everything. It matters in sports. It matters in everything, right? Does it in sports? Does it supersede just pure athletic ability? Of course not. But I do think it matters. And with a guy like Lamont Wade Jr., who is, like you said, kind of a fourth outfielder bench type guy, if you're smart and you know your own game and you work hard to get good at multiple defensive positions like he did, because like you said, he can play first base as well as all three outfield spots, that makes a difference. And I think that intelligence contributed to him taking great at-bats. His on-base percentage going back to college is always in the 380 to 400 range. I talked to him a bunch in the minors and a few times when he was in the big leagues. He's a really intelligent guy. And like you said, Falvey and Levine and Rocco, they're smart guys. And you would think when you're comparing players of similar talent like Cave and Wade that you would – and nothing against Jake Cave, but you would think you would take that into account, that Lamont Wade Jr. seems like he's a really hard worker and a really smart guy. I'm not saying Cave isn't, but like that stuff matters. And Wade Jr. had it. And I don't understand giving him away for nothing. Right. I mean, I rant about this on Twitter all the time. It's obviously he's like my guy and I loved him in the minors. But he's now getting a chance to finally play and he's earning playing time on a really good team. So what does that tell you? You know, and Badu is the same thing. Badu is a smart guy. You hear interviews with him. He's really well spoken. It's clear, you know, he's obviously a hard worker and yes. He's making the most of it. I mean, he leads the Tigers in OPS in his rookie year. You know, like they just gave these guys away, man.
And it's like a 40-man roster. Like this is not, I'm sorry, this is not that difficult.
Right.
Like right. Jake Cave, expose him. Okay, gets taken. Okay, bye.
Exactly.
Like you know what you've got. So.
Exactly. I mean, and again, with Badu, it was the same with Nick Anderson a couple of years ago. They didn't even have to add him to the 26-man, just the 40-man, you know, like that. There are so many of these fringe relievers that I was just talking about, you know, the Sean Andersons and Derek Laws and of the world. You know, you can't get rid of one of those guys to keep a position player like Badu or Wade Jr. that has real potential. Those were first guesses to me, you know, yeah. Signing Andrelton Simmons, that didn't work out. I was for that signing. You know, I was fine with signing J-Hap. Like,
and Colum, so those yeah. are sec-
and Colum A. Yeah, so those are second guesses. But there were some clear first guesses that they just botched.
I'd also say first or second guess, it's their job not to whiff on the entire list that you just gave us. Like
right.
We're paid to analyze and talk about your moves and what's a good move and what might be a bad move. It's your job to say, you know what? Colum A, something might be up there. Like the White Sox are allowing him to walk away. Why? And look, we're not paid to do that. Like you have intelligence and ability to make phone calls that we don't, which is cool. That's fine. And if you had just given me a list and they had whiffed on two guys, I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's going to happen. But you just gave us an entire list, young and old, that they whiffed on. And the Simmons move is a whiff because of a lot of the other trickle down moves that you just gave us that were whiffs. Like the Simmons move is it's the icing on the cake or the decoration in the cake. Hey, here's a shortstop. He's good. Plug him in. Hey, we're set to go. Right. But when the cake is falling apart below it, the Simmons move does not work. So I just think it's really telling when you go through that list to see how much, because it goes so far beyond one or two moves. And it also goes right. to guys that we probably didn't even really consider, that it's Falvey and Levine's job to not only consider them, but, you know, in Badu's case, have him on the 40-man roster. In Wade's case, you know, be like, okay, Jake Caver, Astadia, okay, they're gone. That's too bad. Like, that's their entire job. And it's just, it's crossed a line to me where it's become really intriguing to talk about the amount of misses, because this is exactly what you were trying to guard against when you hired them. And now it seems like it's mounting. And now it's too much. Now it's definitely concerning.
And listen, when you combine that with a misevaluation in 2017 where they traded away their closer and then made the playoffs. 2019, not getting a starter. The mismanagement in the playoffs in 2019 and 2020. I still like them overall, but these are not unfair criticisms that we're making. These are not cheap shots, because as much as we praise them, I praised them effusively in 2019 and 20 overall. I criticized them, as you guys did, for the playoff moves and not getting a starter. But overall, I thought they did a very good job. But like, if you're going to praise them, then you also have to criticize them when everything goes wrong. And like, if this was a different mark, you know, the Red Sox, they fired Dave Dombrowski in the middle of the next season after they won the World Series.
Yep.
They won the World Series in 2018.
Yep.
And they fired him in, I believe, September 2019. So like, I'm not saying they should be fired. I would certainly give them another year or two to see if they can develop pitching, for sure. But like, these are not unreasonable conversations that we're having. They had a horrible offseason. They missed on basically everyone, and they let guys go for nothing that have become solid players. It's not unfair to point these things out about public figures. That's the end of my rant.
Amen. All right. I think we're done here. Great stuff, though, man. Great. That's a great list. Like, it's not a great list. It's very sad and pathetic. and it's put a huge buzzkill on our summer. But anyway, that list in a nutshell is a big reason why I don't think a 4-game win streak, 3 against Texas, matters. All right, Jake, we'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you, Declan. Thanks to everybody who watched. And Brad Radke, if you're watching this on video, says goodbye as well. See ya.
All right. See ya, Brad.